Racial barriers, escape the hatred because we came from different areas. Too much shame and blame, it will only bury us. Remember all God's children remain various. Remember all God's children remain various.
Hip-hop isn't what hip-hop was, cause hip-hop's reflected by what hip-hop does.
Okay.
And current MCs claim that it's not love, cause nowadays hip-hop ain't shit but a bunch of thugs. They wanna be what Tupac would speak, ignoring his words were to hit you off the street. He may have brought the heat, but it was brought with honesty. Now it's obsolete, cause of these whack-ass mockeries. Acting someone else to me feels ignorant. You could be as real as him, but still be different. I've never been shot at or even seen a million, but we're similar, cause we speak to reach the children. I'm not from the projects, I've ever been to prison, but I've been oppressed by the man's federal system. Skeptical is a takeaway from my day-to-day living, but understand, it goes both ways with racism,
We the people need to break the racial barriers, escape the hatred cause we came from different areas. Too much shame and blame, it will only bury us. Remember all God's children remain various. Remember,
we the people need to break the racial barriers, escape the hatred cause we came from different areas. Too much shame and blame, it will only bury us. Remember all God's children remain various. Ain't no Eminem and I won't pretend to be. This ain't meant for him, nor is it meant for me. It's expressed to those who hate my labeling. Haters better get to know me before you say these things. Enabling these fake fucks to grow and build. I'm judging a man by color, not the growth of his skills. I'm scoping to kill any corporate businesses who promote racism split too, cause they're different. Ignorance is bliss, but don't exist when I'm ripping shit. And don't think I won't get at you cause I'm melanin deficient. I'm not rich yet, but I possess the right equipment to lift your images, prove your bitch is too timid. Too sick to swim with, like I spit the illest liquid. So when I give the gift, listen before you start dissing. Cause this is hip hop, a multicolored prison. No more bullshitting, just knowledge turn wisdom.
We the people need to break the racial barriers, escape the hatred cause we came from different areas. Too much shame and blame, it will only bury us. Remember all God's children remain various.
We the people need to break the racial barriers, escape the hatred cause we came from different areas. Too much shame and blame, it will only bury us. Remember all God's children remain various.
You can fight for freedom or fight for what you believe in, but contradiction is what keeps the fight even. What you hate in someone else is something you hate in yourself. And when you're hating yourself, you're just breaking your health. Might be making your wealth, but you're just mistaking yourself. What's the greatness when only hatred is felt? This fight is ageless and it's embracing the belt. Which side are you taking at the ring of the bell? Good and evil in different hoods and people looks. All deceitful book covers aren't always see-through. You should read through the book before passing the judgment. The color of my skin only distracts away from my substance. May this be the only song I ever have to come with, cause racism is a subject that most can't stomach. I suppose that's cause it's degrading one another. In the end, please present me by my culture, not my color.
Not my color.
We the people need to break the racial barriers, escape the hatred cause we came from different areas. Too much shame and blame, it will only bury us. Remember all God's children remain various.
We the people need to break the racial barriers, escape the hatred cause we came from different areas. Too much shame and blame, it will only bury us. Remember all God's children remain various. We the people need to break the racial barriers, escape the hatred cause we came from different areas. Too much shame and blame, it will only bury us. Remember all God's children remain various.
We the people need to break the racial barriers, escape the hatred cause we came from different areas. Too much shame and blame, it will only bury us.
Remember all God's children remain various.
Remember all God's children remain various.
Whoa, man. No racial barriers. That's what I'm talking about. And that's my good friend Omni, and he's going to be on my show in 2 weeks. And this is Andrew Fetter, When Pigs Fly. Because I don't see no bull flying around here. Coming from live from Las Vegas. And it seems that we're having very nice weather out here, and I hear everybody else is having real cool weather. And speaking of Omni, like I said, he's going to be on my show in 2 weeks. He's going to have his first interview with me. He's also having a show on November 7th, his debuting show at the Aruba on Las Vegas Boulevard and Charleston, which should be pretty cool. And speaking of which, of all no racial barriers, I hope all you out there are doing the responsible thing and getting out and vote for change, of course. I'd like to remind everybody listening out there that if you happen to be coming out in Las Vegas in a short period of time or within a month or so, I have a long, I'm going to be allowing a lot of signing events, so if you want to meet me, please come. And also I want to thank you for all you listening and future listeners, past listeners, of course, PBS Radio for producing my show. On October 18th, I will be having a signing event at the Borders. That's from 1 to 5 at the 2323 South Decatur. That's on the Decatur and Sahara. So please come on down. Following week after that, I will be doing a very very informal, very laid-back. I like doing theirs at Psychic Eye Bookstore at 6848, and that's on October 25th. On West Charleston, that's on Charleston and Rainbow, also in Las Vegas. And then November 8th in Barnes & Noble, heading over across town to 5567 North Stephanie and Henderson. And again, these are all from 1 to 5. And of course, I've been asked to do at in the town square, 6521 Las Vegas Boulevard at their very large Border store, which is a cool store to see. Now, and of course, please do check out AndrewTheHeretic.com. That's where my book is, and it's also related to a lot of subjects we will be discussing today with guests, and he's a very fascinating individual. And before I do feel free in checking out my past shows, and if you have any questions, including regarding out-of-body regression, thoughts or things, Kabbalah, or any other information that you would like to discuss, please feel free in contacting me at flyingpigs@artlover.com or MySpace/AndrewFetter if you have an account. And speaking of my last show with Ben Yosef, which was fascinating, he has informed me that he will be bringing on in December Jimmy Ten Rivers, who is one of the elders and spiritual leaders of the Apache Nation, and he will be discussing about Geronimo's skull being absconded, stolen by Prescott Bush, and how it is sitting within Skull and Bones, which we'll discuss then, which is going to be very, very fascinating. Now, for my guest that I have on, it is really unique because he lays down a subject, which I'm very heard in my past shows, where he corresponds between the science and spirituality, but he does it in such a methodical way. He produced a book. Now, let me tell you who James Taylor is. He, besides being a published author, he's also a musician, an artist, and a retired international business executive. He has lived on 4 continents and traveled to more than 40 countries. Now, James has been interviewing in with his accomplishment with this great book, has interviewed multiple scientists and spiritual leaders for the past 15 years. And what we now know regarding human energy and what he's discovered and uncovered with his mind expanding, and I just believe he put it straight up, truly phenomenal book, it's plain to say. Hey, James, are you still there?
Yeah, Andrew. Thank you very much for the great introduction.
Hey, no problem. You know, I got to hand it to you because I first saw this, it's sort of funny because I think things are coming together, a lot of things, and what I liked what you did in your book, and by the way, the book is called The Assumptions, it put into a picture in a very methodical way of merging, showing how the science that we do know, and doing it in such a way so that even if you don't understand any scientific, you know, have a background, you don't have to be, you know, a PhD in science and in the sciences, whether it's quantum physics or mathematics, you can understand this concept, which I think that was just is great. And you bring a concept of the concepts of philosophy with into the areas of in logic, by the way, in your concepts. So before I get into this, how did you decide to get into writing this book?
Well, it really is quite interesting. I was living in China, and most of my friends there were Buddhists, And they started sharing experiences with me that were truly amazing, and firsthand witness of miracles that they themselves had experienced. And later, I had moved to Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, and the same thing happened there, except they were Muslim. And I had experience as a Christian growing up, and I'm firsthand experiences as well, and people that I knew, and I thought, well, something is right here, because if there's only one way to succeed, and each doctrine proclaims their way is the only way, then how is this happening? So I, instead of turning to even more religious philosophies, I turned to the sciences to see if there was some way to comprehend how human beings are creating miracles in their life, and if there was some way to explain it and tie them all together, because something was going on in each of them that was manifesting undeniable realities and experiences that were miraculous. And so essentially that was the beginning of the quest, and it led me to all different types of religious and spiritual leaders to hear their take, and also scientists to hear their take. And when you step back from all of those discussions, you find out that they're all talking about the same thing.
Yeah, that's pretty much. So that's basically the concept of what you're talking about with in your book in the beginning. So listen out there, understand, is the idea of perceptions versus assumptions. Can you expand upon that? How does that relate, and how is that, you know, you give a great inference in your book regarding the view of the chair, but how would that relate, you know, could you expand upon that, and how that would relate?
Of course, and in fact, everybody has had this happen. If you've ever had a girlfriend, boyfriend, or a spouse, then you've seen one event happen, and you will fight and argue over that event, and each of you adamantly will have a perspective that is in contrast to your lover, spouse, or significant other, and that can lead to pretty intense discussions and fights and breakups and so on. But your perspectives were different, but the event being discussed was the same. And when you peel back the onion of those discussions, and I have...
Sounds like the Republicans and the Democrats.
It is exactly that. And when you peel back the onion and look at what the founding assumptions were for each of those arguments, then you'll find out what separated them. And it's always the assumptions that lie underneath the argument of their perspective that's causing that perspective to clash with the other. And in the book, as you mentioned about the chair, if you're on top of the chair looking down or on bottom of the chair looking up, your description of that chair is quite different, but each is actually true. They're not wrong. They're just different.
Right, because when you get to the core of it, you're seeing maybe the prongs of the chair underneath, so you're describing the prongs. So that's what you think the chair is, and if you're looking down or the side, you definitely hit it. You know, it's interesting when you bring that up, because I, from now they know from research through the quantum side of things, that they're finding out that some scientists, when scientists, you know, the old idea, you put a hypothesis, then you proceed with the experiment, and then is the outcome. Well, they're finding out that if the scientist has a belief and a perception of something, of what the idea of what that outcome is, even if it's underlying and it is unconscious or whatever, that the results that he was believing will probably happen will eventually happen in his or her experiment, which leads me to believe that it's like the same thing which you're talking about, perception. It eventually gives that perception, which I'm leading over to later on some other areas which are in your book. But what fascinated me is Einstein had always said that we should possibly change our idea of methodology and science, because we're working on a very linear, finite aspect of our sciences when we perform experiments, and which led me to believe maybe he understood that we also put our own input, which therefore creates the output of our own system, or in other words, our belief affects the outcome of the experiment.
And in fact, there's been really thousands of experiments that prove exactly that point. One of my favorite is Cleve Baxter, the renowned lie detector guy. In fact, I think he's out in Las Vegas, isn't he? Or California. And he was a head guy for a long time with the FBI, CIA, et cetera. In fact, he established the polygraph industry. And when he hooked it up to plants with the intention of finding out if the electromagnetic current was greater after he watered them, what he discovered was that they reacted to his emotions. In other words, he intended to burn the plant, and the polygraph went crazy. He didn't do anything. He just had the thought that he intended to burn the plant, and the plant went off. Well, it changed his life, and for the next 30 years, that's all he did was experiments about plants, and he proved that plants can detect human energy. But when they tried to reproduce those experiments, they were having a lot of trouble around the world reproducing them for exactly the reason you brought up. The human being involved in conducting those experiments, their demeanor, their emotional disposition, their feelings and their thoughts were being transmitted and picked up by the plants during those experiments. So if they weren't in the frame of mind that Cleve Baxter was in when he performed them, then the outcome would be different because human energy was changing the result because the plants were picking up those results. Now there's one other piece to this, and this is truly amazing stuff. They did an experiment where they had a group of people come in a room with a group of plants being monitored with these polygraph machines, and one of them, unknown to anybody else, was to rip the leaves off the plants. And when they did, when they ripped the leaves off of one plant, all the plants reacted the same way. The needles started jumping all over the place. And about 2 weeks later, the guy that was chosen in that particular experiment to rip the leaves off dropped by to ask him to get a lunch. And when he showed up, the reaction was the same. The plants remembered him.
Wow.
So it means that consciousness is something that is a part of all physical matter, and it communicates in all directions with all things. Quantum physics is now proving this out as fact by understanding that we're all comprised of energy. A steel ball is 99% open space. An atom is a nucleus with a bunch of protons and neutrons and electrons swirling around outside, and in between all that is open space, and we didn't know what that was. Now we understand that that's energy.
So the space that's in between, that there, you mentioned in your book the 99% space,
yes,
which is a common denominator in all atoms and in every single thing in our universe is... Now that space that you're talking about, is that you're talking of the area of energy? Because I've heard, and also in quantum physics, the reverse side of that is, and I'm thinking where they're talking about when they're trying to create that, you know, the crash in the protons and get to that little area called, I think they call it God or something like that, as the element within it, but of the antimatter. Because I've always heard that from a quantum, because there's the two sides of our universe, like we're on the matter side. And on matter side, things are three-dimensional as far as matter and one-dimensional in time. And when you go faster than the speed of light or you go the reverse side of antimatter, then matter becomes one-dimensional and time becomes multi-dimensional, so at least three-dimensional. So is that the space? Is that maybe the key between the connection? Is that the reverse side of antimatter?
Yes, it's been called antimatter, it's been called dark matter, but it actually is energy. It's like the glue that holds everything together. Let me give you a great metaphor. Imagine that you are inside of a balloon that's blown up, and you protrude your face outward to leave an impression in the balloon. So I'm standing outside and say, oh, that's Andrew. And I see that's your face. Well, imagine that everything that's in the physical world is doing the same thing. It's putting its own little bulge out there so you can recognize it as being whatever it is. the key is that none of those bulges would exist without the balloon itself providing the material, the building block, to construct that image. Well, that's what they have discovered in quantum physics, is the energy itself is that construct, and without it, you can't have physical matter. So,
so that 99% space is that area of energy that's connecting us in that level where our feelings, our emotions, our, you call it, our psychic thing, if you want to call it that, our spiritual connectedness, that's the area where we're all connected.
That's correct, and in fact, a lot of people with their various religions bias, not that's not good or bad, but with their sway, can also see that as like the signature or the footprint of God. It is the one omnipresent component of all physical matter, and it communicates all the time. It's all interconnected. Do you recall the DNA experiment I mentioned in the book about? They put some people in New York, and they took some of their DNA and put it in a lab in California, and they were monitoring the double helixes.
Right. I've heard that similar thing. That's why when you said that, there was actually, you mentioned, prior to that, because I know about that experiment, it was actually, there was the light guy, what's the name, Maxwell, did the light detector. He took a piece of tissue and did the same thing.
Yes.
And took it away from something. They observed the person, and they saw the tissue they have of the person reacting the same way as the lie detector, is like identical. I mean, as far as emotional, then it showed that connectiveness. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. And to continue for at least the listening audience, the experiment, they showed the people in New York a series of short clips that would make them derive different emotional states of being, sad or erotic or happy or fearful. And when they felt negative dispositions in response to those movies, the double helix strands of DNA tightened up like wringing out a wet dish rag. And when they felt something positive emotionally, it loosened up and relaxed and expanded. Now, the key to that is not only are you affecting your DNA by your emotional disposition, but you are communicating with it outside of your five senses, and proximity has nothing to do with it. So it's an experiment that shows that there is a communication channel occurring from human beings that is not detectable with your standard five senses, but it is there and it is occurring, and you can't stop it.
Now I have a question for you on that issue, because you know, then what if that is a connectedness and there's energy, and I've heard the idea of there's the observer or the soul, like some scientists call it. So if the soul, is the soul within that 99%, or is the soul outside that 99%?
Well, now you're leading to conjecture, because I don't think we really know that yet. In science, we know that you can't exist without this energy, without this 99%. Open space, which is energy, in every atom. Now, what is it? Is it your spirit? Is it guided by your spirit? We're not sure. I mean, in quantum physics, it's called the zero-point energy field. And so we give it a label. You could argue that it's spirit, but the one key component of it is that it's influenceable, and it is there, and it's communicating. And if you're not using that consciously in your life, if you're not aware of the energy you're producing and how you are producing it, which is what you're feeling, your emotions, and the thoughts that you have that drive those emotions, that if you're not consciously using those to your own advantage, then the odds are you're using them to your disadvantage. And you're creating a life that you may not like at all.
So that's the area where our thoughts and emotions. In fact, my idea, I always place on past shows, I always speak of will, motion, belief is our idea of creation. So in creating your initial reality. So like when you will something, it's the action of it. Your emotion is the energy of it. And the belief is the direction of that thought.
Yes.
And so that is that area that you're talking about, that when you're throwing that thought or emotion, even it's like... it can amplify, and if people all around us, I'm leading to another area, but if everybody becomes angry, then everybody becomes even more angry, and so that seems to multiply. Because I lived in the Middle East for about 6 years during the 80s, and it's not just typical, just like when I was in during the situation in Lebanon or in the Middle East, when there's a lot of anger over religious, because it gets very passionate. But
did you say was?
It was.
Still is.
So it's actually worse. A lot worse. But even within, like here in the U.S., you see the same thing in different elements. People get extremely, and then, they say, oh, they're extremists over there, the Muslims, and they're killing each other. But I see the same elements here with the same passionate, it's my way or the highway, and anger behind it, and throwing those same thoughts that create the same circumstances. Not saying that, like getting very existential about like 9/11 or whatever, but we are all basically the same products that we do in a way, and I hate to quote Charlie Manson, but he used to say, as sick as he was, he is a product of our society, which he really was a product of our society, a product of us, because we're all sort of connected. Even the criminals are a product of ourselves, because we create that within our own thought processes around the world, which you amplified in your book, which I thought was very courageous to put it that way, because it makes people very responsible for their choices and their thought patterns. Which leads me away, before I get and jump off, because I'm going to jump, I know I'm going to be jumping from different tangents, because your book leads into a multiple area. One thing common I notice people in today's society, when you're talking about thoughts and emotions, and I know a lot of people, because they get depressed, like the economic situation, and you have a lot of people who are manic depressant or think they're manic depressant, or they're bipolar. And it seems like an addiction, almost like. And you brought that up in your book about people who get addicted to their emotional things, their emotional depressions. And it seems like if they're taking pills to, basically numb the things, that's not really dealing with the real problem. Am I correct?
Yeah, you are correct. And in fact, I realized just this past week that whole section of the book actually explains why you can't teach an old dog new tricks. It actually verifies that cliche, because what really happens is that, and I give this credit to, I think Candace Pert published this in her research, but they unraveled the emotional system of the human being, and they now realize that when you feel an emotion, the hypothalamus gland produces a protein or a peptide. It's actually a neuropeptide. And it sends that into the bloodstream, and the cells have receptors on the outside of all the cells. And the cells are looking for these proteins, and when it gets there, it kind of locks into the cell, and when it does, it changes the actual chemistry of your cells. Now, there's a unique neuropeptide associated with every single emotion that you have, or every derivative thereof, any emotion. So whatever you are feeling, you actually are that at your chemical level. So, when you meet somebody and the chemistry's right or wrong, now it explains why it's right or wrong. Your chemistry is producing energy based on the chosen disposition emotionally that you choose to have. And they're doing the same thing. So sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. But we've all had that experience and we've all known when that chemistry is there. We can't explain it, but we can feel it. Now we understand why. Now, what you're alluding to is this. Take a depressed person that's been depressed for a very long period of time. And they have a happy event that shows up in their life, and they get cheerful, but it really doesn't last very long because they have trained their body to look for the specific protein that they have been producing based on the emotion that produces it. So what happens is the body actually starts yearning, almost like an addiction to cocaine, starts yearning for that particular peptide, and then brings the body back to an emotional state that will produce it for them. So you trained your body to look for it based on the chosen disposition that you alone chose for yourself. Isn't that amazing how powerful we are?
So how would, and that leads to the big question of the day, not necessarily the big question, but That thing is very simple, but when I tell people that, or you or our listeners hear that, they go, okay, that's great. And it's so, but how would they be able to do that? See, I always think it's, you know, baby steps to make bigger steps. And is it just basically they have to go through a process of consistently changing their thought patterns?
They have to change. Well, that I'm going to
changing the tapes, as they call it.
Yes, in a way. In fact, that's the way they've been teaching it for years. But there's an update to that, and let me introduce something first before I get to that. The emotional state of being that you're choosing, if it is anything negative, they have proven actually shuts down or deteriorates your immune system. So if you're in a negative state of being, you're going to be more susceptible to all kinds of diseases and colds and just you won't heal as fast. Your wounds won't heal as fast. Your immune system is depressed when you're feeling negative emotions. When you're feeling positive emotions, it enhances that immune system. In fact, there's some great YouTube videos out there by Bruce Lipton that explains how that works, and all the way down to the DNA, but that's actually a whole other call. So what happens is that you have been producing an emotional state of being. If it's negative, you've deteriorated yourself. Now, I'm going to correlate this to religion for just a minute. It's a great navigational armament that you have, because if any religion comes to you and says, I want you to hate gays or black people or infidels or Christians or Americans, then by the very nature of hating, you are actually deteriorating your physical state of being. Now, I whatever your religion is, and any of the listeners that are listening, whatever spiritual beliefs they have, if they believe that their creator and their God wants them to deteriorate their own state of being, then that's a pretty crazy thing for a God to want you to do. So one of the great navigational instruments that we all have, based on a scientific understanding of what we're doing to ourselves, is that when we're subscribing to a belief system, if it's producing something negative in emotions for you, then you're on the wrong path. God doesn't want you doing that. You see?
Yeah, so, but it's not like, but now, that's like 99% of it, but there are still factors, like if somebody has a disease or something. You know, I'm not going to say, like, he can be, very, very enlightened. He's very, got his, basically his whatever together, shit together, whatever you want to call it. But, and he or she, and it's still, the person becomes diseased. I to me, it looks like there's another element, a karmic element, another element that, you know, that predisposes even the most logical reason, of getting that disease. Or something that's not in his body, his immune system changing, that something else out there is changing, decided to change that. Besides not just, I believe that you yourself do, a huge percentage, like 80, 90%, but there is that element that affects it. I mean, it's like, it's like being really careful. Oh, God, I'm taking care, watching myself, I'm eating right, and I'm running, and I'm not going to get I'm watching my health, and then you walk outside and someone runs over and kills you.
Well, you know what? You are right, but believe it or not, at some subconscious level, those events are being attracted into your life. And I have a real-life story of how that example or how that happens. When I was trying to launch this book, I was doing all the right things, I was thinking all the right things, and everything seemed to be going well, but these weird events kept showing up in my life, and I couldn't understand what on earth they were about. I mean, I just wrote a book on this. How in the world could I not be living out what I wrote? So, I mean, even to the point that 2 weeks before I launched the book, someone broke in my house, stole my laptop, my desktop, all my backup system. They left the high-definition screen that went with it as a monitor. They left the iPod. They left the stereo, the guitar. They left everything. They only took my computers. I mean, I had events like that that were just unnerving and really strange. They kept showing up in my life that were delaying and preventing me from releasing the book. I happened to be having a discussion with a very good friend of mine. And
you don't think it could possibly be another I mean, this gets onto the spiritual side. It's not, it'd be something that is more like a benefit for you, for like, let's say you have a, because I mean, we create most of our stuff, but I do believe that there's elements out there that do, that we ultimately are for our own situation. Of course, I believe we predispose it. In this particular lifetime, I'm not going to get into reincarnation stuff yet, but gets into this situation that predisposes that you to walk through an experience, and by your reaction of your experience, you learn to grow. Because, like, if you didn't have any certain obstacles or anything that are, you know, everything's purely bliss, you would never learn. You learn by challenges, learning by facing things that are so you might call negative or situations that are obstructive in a way. Otherwise, there's no growth. That's part of the weight. That's part of the pushing the little weights. If you didn't have any weights to push, your muscles would be insufficient. Same thing in your spiritual side and space and yourself as a person, you would never grow. So that would be, you know, it's true that you're creating all that stuff, but there is an element that in the universe, when you know, that's, I think, and now this gets into beyond the science of it, but it's that would create the that challenge for you, I mean, so to speak, so you could grow and heal.
Well, you are correct in that. Well, you actually said a lot there, but your original question was that you know, you're doing everything right, you're living a great life, and you get hit by a bus. Well, I was getting hit by a bus about twice a week. I mean, eventually my daughter was run over with a car. Two old speeding tickets I didn't pay years ago, they revoked my license. I couldn't get a driver's license. Just silly things that kept showing up in my life, and I was like, this is what is going on. Now, I would be under the same impression that you had exposed, which is, you know, I'm doing the right things. I'm living a great life. Everything's fine. What in the hell is going on here? And in fact, even worse, I felt like a fraud because I just wrote a book on how to create a life. I mean, how the sciences explain how you manifest. So, I was on a phone call with a very close friend of mine, and she said, she pointed out to me that in my past, I was very, very successful in business, but I had a huge ego. And it took me about 15 years to get rid of the ego. I'm a completely different person now, and I like who I am, and I didn't like being an egotistical maniac, and I was. So deep down inside, I had this emotion, this fear, that the impending success of the book and the speaking engagements and so on that would follow would put me back in the spotlight, and that ego would reemerge, and I'd then become someone that I don't like very much, and I was fearful of that. So subconsciously, deep inside of me, I had this fear that I was unaware of. She pointed it out to me. I got rid of the fear, and the very day that I did, my life changed. I haven't had any of those events happen since, and everything's been humming since that day. So I was creating and attracting those events to me to prevent me from succeeding so that I wouldn't have my ego resurface and I wouldn't have to deal with it. So I created it even though it didn't appear that I did. Do you see?
Yeah, but see that you created your lesson. That's what you're saying, exactly what I was talking about. You're moving on the right track. And then you're moving along and all of a sudden, bam, what the hell am I doing? I'm doing going along the way. But it's more or less, wait, there's a lesson that you forgot about to take care of that you need to learn, and the universe pulled you all the way around to fix the problem before you can move up to, let's say, from, you know, high school to college. You still have to take that test that you forgot to take.
Right. The flaw that most people run into is they blame those circumstances on someone else and don't believe that they themselves attract it. Now, I told you there's another piece of this. There were some experiments done by HeartMath in Colorado, which are pretty amazing. They took trained technicians, employees that were trained to, when they changed emotional states, they changed completely. In other words, instead of easing into an emotion, they would switch gears. And they showed them, we're going to show them a series of photographs on a computer, that had, you know, a torn, mangled body from a wreck, an erotic woman. Again, very similar to the DNA experiment, that would create additional, different emotional reactions to those photographs. And they hooked up an electrocardiograph to the heart so that it could monitor the electromagnetic waves coming from the heart. And they hooked up electrocephalograph to the brain to measure the theta, beta, and the gamma rays coming out of our beta waves coming out of your brain. And to their amazement, what they found was that the heart reacted before the brain did every single time. That means that your connection to the world isn't really through your brain. We started earlier by saying that, how do you change this? Well, you change your thoughts, you change the way you think about things. And yes, that's very powerful, but how you feel is the first reaction you have, not your thought. And we used to think the thought caused the feeling, but it doesn't. Your feelings react before your brain does. Now, one more piece of this, and this is truly amazing. They also discovered that the heart reacted, then the brain reacted, but both reacted before the picture ever appeared on the screen.
So really we're going back to where they used to think, scientists, the heart was just the pumping the blood and there was no real emotional connection. Then now they're finding that there is the emotional connection of the heart. So the Greeks were right. The Egyptians were right.
Right. They were right. And in fact, one of the most profound points of that experiment is that they reacted before the picture actually came up. So there was no visual five senses occurring. There was no sight. There was no sound. And as soon as the computer made the decision to throw up this particular picture, then at the quantum layer, remember I said everything communicates, at the quantum layer, the heart picked up, oh, he's about to throw up a mangled body. Oh, shit, this is going to be ugly. And then the brain says, oh, boy, I'm preparing for it to be ugly. And that's what happened. The picture never showed up. Then the picture shows up, and they're prepared for it. So the key to this is that you are interfacing to the world with an energy at the quantum layer that's occurring outside of the five senses, and it's happening all the time, and it even communicates with computers. I mean, if the listeners want to go find some research, there's about 2 million experiments similar to this that were done by Princeton Anomalies Research Group called PAIR at Princeton University, and they published all the studies, and it's out on their website. And they've been doing this for 30 years, showing how human beings can influence computers. And the reason they can, they're made out of the same thing you are. They are 99% energy.
Right.
Right?
Wow. Wow. Not to change the discussion here, but to get into something I didn't want to miss out on is, we were talking a little bit, and I'm from your perspective, with the soul versus the physical, but then in your book you delved into reincarnation, and that's why I was trying to ask you if the soul is outside the body or within the body, because they know for a fact that when you die, you lose 21 grams, as everybody knows, and somebody used to say, oh, is that 21 grams your soul? So my question is, now a lot of organized religions are different. I think Judaism, Taoism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Native American spiritual, they're all pretty much in reincarnation. I heard there's a quasi actually within Islam, because there's a metaphysical part of Islam that do believe in reincarnation and others don't, and it's a whole different thing depending whether you're Shiite or Sunni. And then Christianity definitely doesn't believe in it unless you're agnostic Christian, which is the old original Christianity. So my question is there understanding of reincarnation within the scientific world, or have they processed that, have they understood that there is a possibility of reincarnation? Because since you did bring up past lives.
Well, they do know that there really isn't a conjecture scientifically on this, but they do know that when you die, Newton's law kicks in, and you know you can't create or destroy energy, but you can change the form of it, and that's what happens when you die. what was you physically transforms into something else.
So the body. Basically, your the soul, your body, the connection of it, it's still not lost. It's transferred. Now I'm going to give you the $1 million question.
I love those.
Okay, the $1 million question is, we know when does life begin and when does life cease?
Are you asking that in 3D?
In a scientific area.
Well, science...
And I'm talking about life, not that the cells deteriorate, because there you can say, hey, the person isn't dead until there's absolutely no cells. And there's everybody knows what's about the virus, is it alive or dead? But I'm talking about, because they always say, like I hear from very religious, whether it's Jewish or Christian, that when does life begin? And then, when is death then? So my question is, when does life actually begin?
Let me answer it this way. If I gave you a glass of water, and the water is water, and in this metaphor, we'll assume that's life. And you then mix that water with chemicals to produce a completely new substance. Could be sugar water, could be lemonade, could be anything. It could be acidic. But you change it, and it's now something else. Is the water dead? Is it gone? Is it disappeared? Is it no longer water? No, it's still water. It's still H2O. The molecules are still there. So even though it appears that it's no longer there, it actually is. The water is still water. It's just mixed with something else. So the energy that comprises who you are, now when it was created is, I don't know the answer to that. I have some ideas, but I've got four or five.
What's your ideas?
Well, for example, there's some channelers that have relayed how creation came about and the purpose for it. The Palladians have given explanations in the same way. There's a lot of different channelers that have come with information about how the souls existed in 3D and how they existed outside of 3D, and that we've been around for millenniums, and that we are all a part of a creator God who splintered off, and the soul is nothing more than an extension of that creator God. Call it whatever you want. Jesus.
So it's basically like in the Kabbalistic sense, they call it the tree of life. We're all leaves on the same tree we're looking in different directions. We don't realize that we're always connected because we're on the tree.
That's right, and they couldn't exist without the tree. So I believe, out of all I've studied, that indeed we were created, and the energy that comprises who we are was a true part of God. And religions made a huge wrong assumption, which is that you can disconnect from God. And I don't believe that that is true. I don't think there's any way that we can disconnect from God at all. No matter what you do, Hitler went to heaven just like everybody else. I know that'll make a lot of people cringe when they hear that. But that, if you think about it, they said, well, no, Hitler went to hell, right? But if Hitler went to hell, who created that place? And if Satan or your the devil created hell, then you have to change your assumptions that there are two creators, not one. And the fundamental belief that there's only one God and one creator is no longer true, because now there's two, because there's a place where God is not. So in theology, they had to adopt the idea that you could be separate from God. In other words, if you didn't, then the fear factor wouldn't work for the deliverance of hell and damnation. So I don't believe that you can disconnect, and that we're all created as a...
That's where it's very fascinating you just brought that up, because... This is where I think they call it spirituality and religion. And when you refer to religion, that's pretty much organized religion,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to real dogma within all religions. Like if you get the core of Christianity, the core of Judaism, core of Taoism, the core of Buddhism, Islam, you get down to the very core, which is what I loved about your book. Whether you talk about looking at things at different, whether it's the same chair or not the same chair, or is the chair, when you take off the prongs, you look at everything, it's still with really, well, I say it's not just a perspective, we're all looking at wood. And then that very core element, which is what you brought up in your book, of that there's love, that we tend in real theology within all religions, it's really that show with you, when you get into the core of dogma within all religions, that we're one with God. Even Jesus was saying you can't live without it. And it was really, and this were, and now this gets into the dark side, the light side of things, which I always believe, because God created, I believe, created two sides to give us choice.
Dichotomy, yes.
Because otherwise you wouldn't know what the hell good was.
Right, exactly.
But you create that, the creation of that, knowing that you're, that that's the understanding that we're all part of the same system, we're all connected. That's what God, when they say the Lord is one, that means we're really, actually in Hebrew, when you say the Shema, which is, it's not just the one in Hebrew, it says Beyachad. Achad means really together. So we're actually all the same. In Taoism, it refers to the empty bowl, that we're beyond the self. We're actually the same element. We're all beyond, even beyond God. We're connected beyond the God. So we're all, which is the Tao, which we're all connected. Every spiritual, when you get to the core of dogma within religions, that is the real essence, that we're all really all connected. And then what happens is, what you bring up, which I believe fear is an illusion, they create within all theologies, there's a framework, which I love in your book, so I want to read it off to our listeners. Let me pull it. I have it pulled off, which I thought was excellent way to way organize religions and theologians and rabbis, priests, imams, and whatever the organized religions have done is to create that fear and that guilt pattern to keep you separated, to way of manipulating and control and keep you away from the spiritual conscious. Therefore, they can manipulate. Now, let me read one, and you bring this up over and over again, but I think it's a great basic of what you established within your book. You said religion. Now, I'm talking religion. I really believe that you're talking about organized religion, not within the spiritual essence. You say religion is the framework by which we believe, feel, think, then be in the world. And by the way, that then be is being. And
right.
That was excellently put, because...
and by the way, that is the formula. Every belief system, and particularly an organized religion, which is, by the way, the majority of the inhabitants on this planet subscribe to one of the majors, it teaches you how to feel about matters, how to think about matters, and then how to physically be in relationship to those matters. And so they're all using the same formula, and when they synchronize your beliefs, what you're feeling, with the power of what you're thinking, and then physically what you're doing, then you have synchronized the three aspects of the human existence, and you are a powerful creator, and you will manifest realities very quickly. And when you do, it will be undeniable that you know what you subscribe to works. So if you know that what you subscribe to works, then you want others to have that same experience. So when a Muslim comes to you to convert you, they're actually doing an honorable thing, because they're trying to get you to have the same experience that they enjoyed. But the flaw in the assumption is that their way is the only way that works. The formula that they're using is identical to Christianity or Judaism or any other philosophy, because once, and this is the key, once a human being fully commits to that belief, once they fully embrace it wholeheartedly, without doubt, feeling, thinking, and doing, then they've synchronized and they become very powerful, and they will create, and the experiences will be undeniable, and they'll know that they are right. But that's just as true for one religion as it is the other. The flaw that they've all missed is they're using the same formula that's God-enabled from the energy that you yourself generate. So if the key component of all of those success stories in religious manifestations that I have interviewed thousands of people is that they have to make the choice to give and completely commit to that idea. And when they do, it doesn't really matter. And I know this is going to make a lot of people angry, but you could commit to a tree and the same thing would happen. I mean, think about the tribesmen on the plains of the United States before we arrived from England. Think about Africa. Do you really believe those people would worship trees and rocks for thousands of years if nothing ever happened? No, of course not. they did happen. They were real experiences, and they experienced God through their commitment, but it was their own personal commitment of aligning their beliefs, aligning their feelings and thoughts that manifested the realities that they couldn't deny.
So it's like basically even like the poly religions that believe in, you know, like the Greeks believe in multiple gods or the Hindus that believe in multiple gods, because they utilize the framework, they ultimately have an experience that you're talking about in the framework, and it ultimately works for them. Therefore, like, not to reiterate, you basically hit it on the nose. But they have that experience, and they're trying to just, it's the same experience that maybe someone who believes in a monotheic God or a non-God, if you want to call it that. So it's basically the same thing. I know we only got like a few minutes left, but one thing I want to touch on real quick, because I think it's also very important. What do you suppose, thinking that our DNA and that area, that 99% space is, is energy, is pretty much a fact that the sun is expanding, that there's the amount of electromagnetic energy pulsing that is actually increasing through our solar system, which is also affecting our DNA and our thought patterns and whatnot. How do you feel that's affecting as far as our that 99% area that you expanded upon?
Well, if you imagine that, if you fully comprehend that we are generating positive or negative energy as a human being, then you also realize it's not staying inside of you. It's going external to you, to everything else that's at the quantum layer of things. And if everybody's doing that, there's going to be a homeostasis, an average status quo of energy on this Earth, electromagnetic energy. In fact, the Princeton group monitored that energy around the world and have tons of experiments showing exactly how it fluctuates. One was when the O.J. Simpson trial happened. The meters all around the world peaked at the very moment the verdict was read. 9/11 had the same effect. So when people give their attention, energy, negative or positively, to any matter collectively, it changes the electromagnetic grid on this planet. And if we are all, on average, fearful, then that's going to be the energy that's shrouding the planet, and that is going to influence how we construct our world. Look at what we built. We have religions that divide us. We have economies set up to compete instead of cooperate. We have armies to kill instead of help each other. Those are manifestations of frameworks that came out of an average, if you might, of fear that was hanging around the planet. It wasn't constructed out of love. So there's already been measurements on that electromagnetic energy around the Earth that shows that we have shifted it, and it's getting more positive. We're doing the right thing.
So now, I know, James, we only got a couple of minutes left, so I want our listeners and also future, because this go on archive, how they can get in touch with your book or even in touch with you. And in a summation in your thing, and I'm just going to close out with you closing out, and I wish everybody, thank you for listening to the show again, and I wish everybody a very, easy weekend, have a lot of fun, and take it easy. I know I'm going to a party tonight myself. But tell them how you can get your book, and if how they can contact you, and with that summation, how would you close to as far as bring about that oneness, that oneness consciousness as you bring about in your book?
Well, thank you for having me on the show, first of all. I really appreciate it.
And well, thank you for coming on.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you. My website is theassumptions.com, and my email contact, and actually there's a phone number there as well, that people can reach me. I'm selling the book currently only through the website because I wanted to donate profits to Free Energy. There are groups around the Earth that are have scientists assembled to create energy at the quantum layer that's free, that we wouldn't need to pay for energy anymore, and I'm donating profits to that cause. So if you do buy a book, part of it's going to them. And the oneness idea, just remember that free will is something that everybody has, and the only choices that any human being is allowed to make is their own. You can't make mine for me, and I can't make yours for you. So every day, consciously, as you walk around this planet, you only need really one great navigational guide, and that is, are you producing negative or positive energy? Your reaction to any event, your exposure to any circumstance, your demeanor as a relationship to all things you encounter all day will send out either positive or negative energy. Now, as soon as everybody walking the planet realizes this, then they'll be more choosy about which demeanor they choose to employ. And as more people continue to employ positive reactions to all things and generate positive energy, then that vibrational electromagnetic field that we're existing in will continue to grow, and the world will change. And it all starts with you.
Well, thank you very much, James. And it's James Taylor and theassumptions.com. And I gotta say, reiterate, I'll say it again, great, great book, and congratulations. I wish you, that this book gets around everywhere. Let me know also when it comes, pops on Amazon. I would be delighted to give my own review to it. And I want to thank again all the listeners and future listeners who are listening. And God bless you all, and thank you for listening. God bless you. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.